I started to realize what I really liked was people development. I love people. I love building relationships. I love building culture. I love building experiences. I love helping entrepreneurs, creators, succeed and be able to thrive and kind of reimagine what work and what success or what ambition looks like today.
Our guest today, Tori Lazar, is founder of How to Fuck Up Well, and she helps non-traditional entrepreneurs navigate the choppy waters of change, doubt, a pivot, and more. Join us today on The Unique Genius, the business of creators, where we learn from some of the most successful creators out there. So I'll ask kind of the boring podcast question to get started of just like, you know, how'd you get into it, get started and what you're up to? But just like kind of that maybe origin, would love to hear how you kind of got into this. Cause I know you had career beforehand and then you made a shift.
I have made so many pivots in my career. I mean, I can start with where I'm at today. Today I'm a creative leadership coach and business consultant for purpose-driven entrepreneurs, executives, and brands. I recently launched a creative leadership coaching studio called How to Fuck Up Well. I advise women-led organizations like Female Startup Club and Black Girl Magic, and I also have an advice column for Girl Boss. So I do lots of things, and all of that is really a reflection of just my 10 years of experience going from I started out my career in fashion styling and editorial. So I worked for Grand Soirée, who was one of the original like OG bloggers, an artist, a photographer. So one of the first true kind of multi-hyphenate creators. And then from there, I moved into marketing. I worked for By Baba, which was Baba Rivera's marketing agency at the time. She has now gone on to found Ceremonia, which is a hair care brand. From there, I felt like because that job specifically, we focused on influencer marketing. So yep. I worked a lot with creators there. And at the time, this was kind of like at the beginning of influencer marketing. And I personally felt like it was very shallow.
Yeah.
So if I'm being honest, so I decided to start my own agency that emphasized community building and inviting the customer into that community versus just focusing on hosting these very exclusive events or experiences or partnerships or whatever they were just for influencers. How can we actually bring in the people who are buying the product into the conversation, into the journey, and into the experiences? So I had that agency for about 3.5 years. Over that time, I got to work with really incredible companies across industries like GoDaddy, The Hoxton, which is a large hospitality group. I also worked with startups that were, many of them women-owned, like Nude Bar, which is backed by Serena Williams, a VC company. And through that process, I just feel like I gained a lot of experience that has helped me today and like where I am in terms of the leadership coaching. Yeah. I was able to see all these various like different companies at different stages with very different products. And I think my strong suit in my work is being able to really like shape shift and suit whoever, you know, the leader is or the people that I'm working with, as well as like what the business model is, what the strategy is, and who the audiences are. From there, my client at the time, Norby, which is a creator economy, like VC-backed tech company, they were my client for about a year and a half. I helped them do their go-to-market strategy, which helped them raise their initial seed round. And so around that time, I was kind of like going through this existential crisis of like, do I really want to have a marketing agency? Like, is this what I want to do with my life? I didn't feel challenged anymore. I felt like I was just kind of doing it to do it.
Yeah.
And I felt, obviously I went through a lot of guilt, you know, actually making the decision to close it, but it all kind of happened like very serendipitously, where around the time when I was going through this existential crisis, Norby,
yeah,
who was my client, came to me and offered me, you know, an equity opportunity and to be a part of the team in a bigger way. And I ultimately ended up taking a role as head of community and partnerships. I was with them for about a year, and within that year grew from head of community and partnerships to head of marketing overall, created their full content strategy, which ended up being like their core growth engine from a revenue and as well as like a lead acquisition perspective. And I also served as interim COO. So yep. It was like a very,
wow.
I feel like everything that I've done, it's been like crash course, and I just kind of follow my intuition in every role, job, business that I start. And it's like, okay, I like this. Okay, this works. And then, you know, kind of the minute that it starts to not work, I take the time to like figure out why. And then I try to just kind of like transfer that to something else to get closer to what is, you know, really going to be fulfilling for me. So anyway, I was at Norby.
Yeah.
Then obviously.
Well, I'm curious, what was the guilt? You said the guilt in shutting down the agency to go do something because you'd had this existential crisis.
Yes.
You wanted to move on, but there was still guilt associated with it.
I think it stems from my childhood, actually. My parents are entrepreneurs. My parents have owned restaurants my entire life. I'm a restaurant kid, and I think that I always envisioned myself as an entrepreneur, and I was really disappointed with myself that I didn't want it. I was like, well, why? Like, this is who I am. Like, my identity was so wrapped up in me being this entrepreneur, and it felt almost unnatural to take a role in-house.
Oh, wow. Me.
Because I feel like I just grew up around my parents being business partners, and I think I put that pressure on myself. Like, that's what success is.
Huh.
That's what you do. And so
success is being an entrepreneur and being able to figure it out.
I think very much so. That is what I thought at that time.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that has changed drastically. Obviously, I'm back in an entrepreneurial role, but the way that I approach it today is so different than the way that I approached it then.
It's interesting. It's funny how the parents has such a big impact. My family was more education and go to school and get the degree and get that. And so me, you know, giving up law and all of that stuff and going into entrepreneurship, I think they're all like, my mom still wonders if I have enough to eat.
Yeah. She's still worried about it.
Yeah.
As moms are. Yeah. As moms are. Yeah, it's different. And there are some times where I feel like I had that experience as well. And I think I kind of went through that even during that period of time. I was like, do I go back to school? Like, I went to education as the solution. I sat with that longer and I was like, maybe I don't need to do that. But anyway. Yeah.
And then so, okay, Norby, so and today, then from there,
so
yeah,
Norby,
to today,
the I was jump. Laid off.
Yeah. Okay.
Around the time of everything kind of going on, obviously the volatility in the market. So just to give more context as well, like, I also found myself, you know, during the period that I was serving as like interim COO and handling all the marketing, I was like, I kind of felt like I had gone in a circle where I was like, I'm not happy. I don't want to, like, this isn't what I want. Like, I don't want to be a CMO. I think I had this realization. So I had that happen, but I thought I had the beauty of time to like figure it out. Then I got laid off. Very lucky that I was given a really nice severance package. I think it's very important to note that because I think that's a privilege. And so I took 2 months to just kind of figure myself out.
Yeah.
Really, I was like, if there's any chance to kind of just take a break and try to figure out what I want, now's the time. I did a lot of introspection, really just, you know, listening to podcasts, reading, figuring out hobbies and things that I actually like to do. But I also had a lot of conversations with people within my network that have known me throughout basically that whole decade of my career, and started to talk to them about like my general confusion about what I should do and be really vulnerable about it. And through that, I started to realize what I really liked was people development. I love people. I love building relationships. I love building culture. I love building experiences. I love helping entrepreneurs, creators, succeed and be able to thrive and kind of reimagine what work and what success or what ambition looks like today. One of my friends, actually, who was an entrepreneur, goes to me, have you ever thought about being a leadership coach? And I was like, honestly, the word coach, I was deterrent.
Yeah.
I was deterred. I was like, coach? is that who I am? And then I started to do research and I tried to find, because I feel in the coach space, it's a lot of, I'll be honest, a lot of dudes who are like, I'm going to hack your life. Or it's also women being like, I can increase your revenue by like X percent. And that kind of coaching just like didn't feel natural to me.
Right.
So I looked for kind of, you know, references, and I ended up being connected with this woman. Her name is Liz Tran, and she's a leadership coach. She has been for a while. She came from VC and whatnot. I had a great conversation with her. She like bestowed all of her wisdom on to me very graciously. And I was like, okay, now this feels right. Like the way that she approaches it feels right.
I love you. You're obviously really self-aware, but it's interesting that you've taken the time to go to the people who know you well and then reach out to others. Like you're sort of seeking some of that coaching early on in this journey too, right?
Absolutely. I need to be coached as well. I think that's the thing. Just because I'm a coach doesn't mean that I don't need that same type of support. And I still have a coach who has helped me over the past like 3 years get through the business transition to the, you know, like tech executive experience to where I am today.
Yeah. And they can point out things like your friend who said maybe you should be a leadership coach, something you probably would never have thought of, but someone who knows you well or has been working with you can point that out and say, hey, here's what I see.
Because I had never looked at me giving advice and asking people good questions as a way for me to make money.
Right.
I had never thought about that before. And that friend was like, I come to you when I'm like, help.
Right.
And I need to know what to do. And you help like center me is kind of the language that she used and help me just kind of like see the path forward. And I was like, okay, how do I do this then? And so that's how I came up, you know, with How to Fuck Up Well. The thing that was really important to me was that I had a unique philosophy and approach to how I coach. I didn't just want to, you know, copy and paste.
Yeah.
What other people do. And so I coach through the lens of using failure as a springboard for personal growth, business innovation, and really better leadership. And, you know, from a perspective of just like resilience building and being able to adapt and be able to move forward through uncertain times, which we're obviously currently in, and just through complex changing situations and be able to like use that as, you know, and leverage it, really use it to your advantage.
When my daughter was 3, I started having bedtime conversations with her about failure and asking her, like, what did you fail at today? I've borrowed this from other people. But I would ask her, you know, what's something you failed at today? And the first time I started asking her this, she's like, well, what's failure mean, Dad? Wow. So we got to define failure in our house as like something where it didn't go the way you expected or wanted it to. And it's an opportunity to learn. And then I remember we'd been doing this for about a year or two, and we were out playing in the forest, and my friend's kid was trying to climb up a rock and he fell down, and she jumped up and down and she's like, hey, Luke, you failed. And my friend, the dad, daughter? Looks at me like, what is wrong with your kid?
Wait, I need to
And I'm like, no, failure means something different in our house. Like she's like celebrating that you fail.
That is so special. And it really does start in childhood. I think it's funny you as a dad doing that. My dad, I think, really taught me the same thing.
Awesome.
It's okay to fail.
Yeah.
It's okay to make mistakes. Like, just learn from it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's fun. Now, but to hear herself talk now is awesome, because I can hear her on the soccer pitch or anywhere, and she's just like, you can do this, Athena.
And
like, let's go.
Like, all it takes is one parent parenting their child that way, and then the child, like, exudes that.
Oh, I can't take even half the credit, but
you're like,
there's another parent.
There's another parent.
Yeah,
there's co-parenting, obviously.
Yeah.
But just one kid
who
has that mindset then is able to kind of like bring that to any environment. And like, I think that's how I think about coaching as well. It's like, it starts with the leader, starts with this one person, and then it's up to them to be able to transfer that to other people and, you know, grow their team or their business in that way.
So this is kind of how you got into it. And yes, that's interesting. So I love that sort of moment where you wake up and realize the thing I'm good at,
yep,
the thing that people come to me for is something I can make money from.
Yes.
I'm always curious, people sort of first dollar when they land on this. Like, what was that first dollar experience like for you?
It was honestly, I mean, I think it happened really, this is the crazy thing. When you realize what you're really good at and you monetize that, everything becomes easier. The second that I started to kind of like announce to my network, I just sent an email out to my network and I was like, hey, I'm going to start doing this. Like, let me know. I had a past client from my marketing agency reach out to me. She's now a co-founder of a fintech company.
Yeah.
And she was like, I could really use this. Like, can we talk about this? We got on one call. And because obviously I had built that relationship, she trusts me and whatnot, the services made sense to her, her knowing me.
Yeah.
She was like, I'm in. Yeah. And it was like no negotiation.
Yeah.
She paid exactly what I put in front of her. And I think that's the thing. It's like, I was so used to in the past having to really like advocate for myself. And, you know, I, especially with the marketing agency, being like nickel and dimed. And again, I think it goes back to like, it was unnatural. Like, it wasn't necessarily right for me. That wasn't the right business for me. And with this, I just feel like generally the money is coming more naturally.
Great.
Where I have an elevated or premium rate as a coach. And, you know, I validate that because I have this decade-long experience with various industries, various stages of business, lots of different things in my toolkit. So it's like beyond that session, you get access to all of that. And I think that's really important to mention is a coach and being, because I've seen coaches like charge, they undersell themselves a lot of the time. I think I see a lot of coaches undervalue themselves and charge rates like $150 in an hour. And I'm like, no, because it's like, it's not just that session.
Yeah.
It's all of the experience or the education or whatever you've invested.
Everything you're bringing to it.
Everything you're bringing.
And the time you spend preparing for it and reviewing.
Exactly. And I'm like very, again, I learned this through the past jobs, but I'm like extremely explicit about this is the price. I'm not flexible on reducing my rate. I'm flexible on scope of work. Yeah. That's it. And here's what you get. And it's been working.
Great.
So feeling really good.
That's good. And you said you sent it to start. You sent it out to your network.
Oh, yeah.
So is this something that you were like, in advance, thought I need to start building a social media following and build this up? Or was the, what was the network at the time? Just people you knew? And
my email list, just from my career.
Just people you knew?
People that, I knew. Like,
so not an email list of people that signed
up. Not like subscribers. Nope.
Just people you had emailed with in the past. So we all have this.
And that's the thing.
That.
And I advise my clients to do the same thing. But just the collection of people that I've built relationships with.
Because they already know, like, and trust you in a lot of cases.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of them I've already worked with, whether that was directly or indirectly through a partnership for a client. Like, they all know who I am. And the beauty of what I've always done, it's always been about relationship building. So people really have gotten to know me in a work setting. They, like, know what my intentions are, which is nice. So, yeah, I just sent out an email. It's not like I designed it. Just wrote a really heartfelt, authentic email where I was like, I've been going through it. This is what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
Open to feedback. Like, if you're looking for this type of support, would love to have a conversation with you. When it comes to this, if you're starting a business, you know, especially as like a creator, as a coach, or where it's, you know, kind of amorphous in a way. It's like, just start and be vulnerable with people. Be really open about what your ask is and your intentions. And, you know, it usually leads to a conversation that leads to a conversation that might lead to a client.
And how do you, so now that you're in this, how do you think about, and it seems like through this story, you've developed a, I don't know, a vision or values around, what do you think about your vision, your mission? What's that look like for you? Or how do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, my mission is absolutely to destigmatize failure. That's like the mission. Mm-hmm. And to use that, like I said before, as a springboard for personal growth, business, innovation, and better leadership. So like, that's the mission. The vision for like how I do that is still evolving. I think will always evolve. Like, I think when I had my art marketing agency in the past, one of the things that I wouldn't say regret, or like the way that I wish that I had looked at it, is like to not get so caught up in like what the business is.
Yeah.
It's not about what the business is. It's really about the mission and like your intentions and your why, and the way that I can monetize this mission or bring meaning to this mission can change over time.
That can evolve as long as you're true to yourself and true to your
mission. Yeah. And, you know, as if I build a team, as long as I'm true to the team and what we all collectively want or want to work towards, then that's really all that matters to me. Right now it's coaching. I'm going to launch a Substack newsletter in the next month. I'm thinking about a podcast. Like, I don't know. I'm just dipping my toes in all the things, and we'll see what sticks and what brings me joy as well.
I'm curious how you think about success or what that looks like. You've got the mission, but do you measure your path or what success looks like, or metrics? I know you advise, you know, even technology companies, VC-backed companies, where they're can be very like metric focused when they think about success. What's success look like for you? How do you sort of value that or measure it or track it?
In the past, I would say I was very focused on individual outcomes.
Yeah.
Today, I genuinely believe that success is achieving your intended impact.
Okay.
It's less so about like a tangible outcome.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that is, are you achieving things in a way that aligns with your core values, with your mission, with the legacy that you want to kind of like leave behind as well? Are you going to be proud of the choices that you made later? Did you make other people feel good along the way?
Yeah.
Did you provide them what they need to be successful as well? Like it's not tangible necessarily, and you have to bring your own subjective meaning to that. But that's success. And when you look at success, I think in that way, it's more holistic. And you get less caught up or attached to these like very specific outcomes. Like, let's say, increase my newsletter subscribers by X percent.
Get to a certain number of followers or views or...
Great. But at the end of the day, if you're killing yourself, you're being terrible to the people around you, you're, you know, compromising your own well-being... What's that worth? Like, why? It's not worth it. At least to me, it's not worth it.
No, it sounds like you're really conscious of the goals you set tend to drive behavior. What are the behaviors you want to be driving? That helps determine the goals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the tangible outcomes, they should be plug and play. Because again, like I said, things are constantly changing. You're constantly evolving. And if you're at a technology company or software company and you're, you know, in the very beginning stages, you kind of just have to play and test and see what works and be open to changing what your outcomes are along the way. And I think in my experience, I've seen leaders get so caught up on those outcomes, and it can destroy the culture of a company, which ultimately leads to people leaving.
Right.
It can lead to burnout. Like, it leads to less productivity, less creativity.
Even if it's just you.
Even if it's just you. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing the coaching model now. Have you considered other expanding different business models, diversification? Have you looked at or tried other things in this space? Or
Yes. The one thing that I feel like this is the obvious thing to consider is courses. I don't feel that I'm ready to dive into courses yet. And what I'm doing through my one-to-one coaching, I'm kind of using it as research for what that course might be.
Right.
In the future, I'm doing lots of group workshops for other organizations, like Working Not Working and whatnot, to be able to test like what works in a group setting or what works for a larger amount of people than in a one-to-one setting, because it's very different. My strong suit is in a one-to-one setting. I absolutely know that. It's also, I get the most like joy out of that myself. But I think a course from a business perspective, you know, now you're seeing people like Esther Perel. She just launched a conflict course.
Right.
It's something that I see in the future for myself, but not right now. And that's why I'm starting more with a newsletter. So I'll start that free for a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
And then I'll start to add in other pieces of content and start to charge for that through Substack.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll see if I launch a podcast and then talks with someone about that. And I know how to monetize a podcast because I did it for clients before.
Yeah.
So that feels like a really natural thing for me to do where it's like, all of it is like true to my core and true to what I do in the one-to-one coaching, which is where I always want to be spending majority of my personal time.
Yeah.
And then as, you know, the business grows, I get more clients, I, you know, build up enough funds as well to hire people to help me. I think that's where I'll expand to like something like a course.
Yeah. And you mentioned potentially like if you add team members, I know you've grown teams in your roles prior to this one. How would you look at when you would add someone to the team?
So I think this goes back to also like kind of my financial strategy. I'm all about, especially as a creator or a single person entity, make sure you can pay yourself well first.
Right.
And make sure that you're able to put away money. You're able to save money. You're able to invest to your own.
So you're not taking the VC model of burn lots of cash to grow.
Absolutely.
This is like pay profitable at all times,
I am
pay
like,
well.
Let's bootstrap it until, like I just want to bootstrap it.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and this is the beauty of being like a creator or an individual entity, you can still do things like, who the hell knows? Like maybe I launch like a food brand down the line, but maybe I partner with a company on that and I use their fund, like we tap their funds for that. Like that's genuinely how you can approach it as a creator because you're bringing a different kind of value.
Yep.
So I look at it like that. It's like, I pay myself first. I pay myself well. I make sure I'm secure because if I'm not secure, then I can't make sure another person is secure.
Right.
And that's a huge thing that I learned from the marketing agency in the past. I feel like I rushed to hire a team and I love them and I maintain relationships with them today, but it burnt me out so much because I felt so much stress. I compromised on
because you have to support them, make sure they're secure and supported and paid.
Exactly.
There's enough work for them.
And again, that was part of the guilt as well of me, you know, closing the business too. There was that layer of having to, I felt like I was disappointing people and I don't want to do that anymore. And I think, you know, this way of working and way of being is allowing me to do that.
And would you ever, you're early in the journey, but have you thought at all about things like liquidity, taking investment, selling at some point or like, and I know you've advised others. So how do you?
When advising others, I give them the same advice. I think bootstrap as long as you can.
Yep.
If you reach a point where you really do need funds, because again, sometimes to develop a product is very expensive. I advise people to look towards grants. And angel investing, I also advise a lot of women entrepreneurs, and I find that women find more success in those realms because there are now, I think, a lot of women entrepreneurs or successful women in leadership who want to put that money back into women-owned companies and whatnot. And then, you know, if you are going the route of venture capital, you need to go in knowing what you want out of that relationship as well and have a general hunch of what your business strategy should be going forward, what works and what doesn't. Because what I have seen with venture capital is founders succumb to certain pressures.
Right.
Or they completely lose their confidence in the process and end up making decisions that are not authentic to them and like why they originally started or the business goals and culture. So I think it's like, VC is great as well, but you really got to do the work before you go for that and make sure you know why you're there.
And I think understand their motivations and what's a successful outcome to them.
Yeah.
Because if your outcome is doing one-on-one coaching and enjoying your life and generating sufficient revenue, that's not going to line up with VC investment.
Exactly.
So,
it's like marrying definitions of success,
right?
Which is extremely challenging and requires very strong communication and so I think it's just you have to really understand and feel like that, you know, financial partner blends well.
Right.
With you.
Yeah.
And what
yeah.
you think.
But I think one of the great things about the whole creator industry and building these businesses is you get to build something where you don't have to go and do that. Like you said, you can be profitable from day one. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as that email came back and someone said, I'm in, you're like, I'm making money.
It's profitable because there's no overhead costs.
Yeah.
It's me.
Yeah.
It's my brain.
And then, as you said, be careful about before you add a team member that you're well covered. So you're not getting into this concept. Because I do think there's this idea that circulates, whether it's VC funding or just hiring and growing, or this need to scale, that people scale too soon, unprofitably, or even just poor, where you're not financially secure as yeah. you should be. So like you said, more than just be profitable or be, you're like, I'm really well paid before I'm considering bringing someone else in.
Absolutely. Because yeah. it just starts with the individuals mm-hmm. and everyone. You cannot hire someone and make sure they are secure mm-hmm. unless you are secure.
Yeah.
It's just basic human needs.
Yeah.
That's it. And so I think that's what I just try to do, is like go back to basics.
Yeah.
Like, if what do I need individually to be okay, to be secure, to feel safe, to feel fulfilled? And if that's filled up, okay, then I'm ready to like pour that into someone else and help them get there too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also, you know, part of what I do with the leadership coaching is I help leaders not just do it for themselves, but then scale that. It's like, how are you scaling this definition of success? How are you scaling the core values? Like, how are you bringing actual meaning to values as well? Because, yeah. you know,
how do you scale core values and definition of success?
Over communication.
Oh, yeah.
But I think leaders are absolutely responsible to continuously kind of reiterate yeah. their why, and like why people are doing things. Mm-hmm. Or managers and whatnot. And like, that is so important. I think oftentimes I have clients who come to me and they're like, oh, I feel like I said that so many times already. I don't know why the team doesn't, I'm going to curse, doesn't fucking get it yet. Like, and I'm like, that's human nature.
Yeah.
Who knows what's happening on the other end? You have some team members in the office with you, some team members
yeah.
on their laptop. They might have their kid on the other side. Like, they're not here. So it's like, you have to over communicate. But then also it's like, taking the time to invite your team members into that process. And again, bring meaning to the values. So how are we applying the values tangibly to our processes mm-hmm. as well, to how we review performance?
Right.
And it's like—
Or hiring.
It's like looking at every facet or every interaction, every process within the business. And again, the most work happens at the very beginning when you're really just starting and you have to set all of this up.
Right.
And I often see leaders be like, oh, we can do that later.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Sooner is better. Yeah.
Sooner is better. It's like, put in the work then, when it's just you and one other person, just you and three other people. And then, because once you add in 100 people, when do you have time to do that?
Have you looked at process to develop that? Or how do you think about developing, say, your core values?
It's different for every person
yeah.
and every company. And so I try to cater how I do that mm-hmm. to them. But I would say it's really like, again, I start with the individual. So I usually will have, let's say, the leader or the executive mm-hmm. or the manager, and you can do this with multiple people or yeah. one person, have them all write down, what are my individual core values? Mm-hmm. How do they transfer to the business?
Yep.
And like, put down actual examples from there. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is how it translates. Here are examples of how that might show up and how I conduct myself in the mm-hmm. business, or what a process looks like. And then from there, typically I would review all of that. I'd yeah. draw like themes. Obviously I would connect the dots mm-hmm. kind of for them. And then I'd bring them together based off of that. And it's like, here's where you align.
Yeah.
Here's where the differences are.
Right.
How do we compromise on the differences? Do we remove any of this? Mm-hmm. And then how do we, from here, outline yeah. a cohesive set of core values, and then also revisit them
right
over time?
Yeah.
You know, every quarter, or, you know, at least twice a year.
Yeah.
How are we constantly revisiting them? Not just the three people who started them, mm-hmm. but are we inviting other people into that conversation as well? Yeah. So, yeah.
I heard you say two, I think, really important things of like, what are they? Mm-hmm. not what do we want them to be, mm-hmm. and what are the examples mm-hmm. of how we're already living them, which I think is, it's an interesting part of developing. So many things in business are about what's the vision, what do we want it to be, what do we, would you know, how will we get there, what are the things we're going to do. This sounds like it's very much like what's in our DNA, right?
What are we doing right
and
now?
How can we prove that we're already like this?
Exactly.
On a
and that's why it should evolve, because the business will evolve, more team members will be added, things will change. So you can't have the same set of core values at year one that you have at year five.
Because as you add people, your culture evolves, people are additive to it, as exactly. opposed to they have to fit in exactly the way you are.
Exactly.
Right. So given your mission on failures, I got to ask, any big failures for you that are really profound in terms of
yes.
this whole journey?
Yes. The marketing agency that I had.
Yeah.
I founded that with a co-founder. Mm-hmm. And a year into our business, we were very successful in our first year of business. Our relationship went to shit. We broke up, and it was the hardest experience that I have ever been through. And you know, I say that that's a perceived failure. Mm-hmm. You know, in that time, I felt like a failure. I think other people look at breakups like that as a, mm-hmm. as a failure. Mm-hmm. I learned a shit ton from that. I learned a lot from that experience, but it was really hard for me because we were friends for 5 years prior to that. So in the process, I was grieving a friendship. I was fighting for my business as well to keep my business. You know, was going through a pretty nasty legal battle. I basically had to spend all of my money on that legal battle. I had to pay a buyout. And again, it was a year into the business. It wasn't like I was rolling in the dough yet. I was fine. I was secure.
Yeah.
But this took all of my security away. And also, I think up until that point, like I said, my parents were business partners. I think I had always envisioned entrepreneurship as being in partnership
right.
with someone else.
Yeah.
And so this experience really forced me to be like, no, I can do it mm-hmm. on my own. But that was really, really scary to yeah. do, especially, you know, at a low point financially. I will say, just to keep it 100% transparent, I had a wonderful friend who is actually my husband's childhood friend.
Yeah.
He saw me struggling and he loaned me money. He basically, like an angel investment, he just was like, here's money so you can keep your business and be able to like move forward, because I kept clients and I was one person. So I also had to then execute after I fought for my business.
Right.
So he gave me the funds to be able to hire some support at that time. And I honestly, I don't know how I could have gone through that without him, but I would say that was tough.
Wow. Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah. It's like, we never really do it on our own, right?
No.
Nobody, but it's amazing how many people do get into partnerships. I've had a few bad partnership breakups too, and some good ones for sure yeah. too. Some great ones.
Totally.
But, it's like you said, it's scary to go on your own. So I think sometimes people, you have to really think about who you're taking on and why, and if
absolutely.
It's absolutely necessary, or if you're just doing it because you're scared to try on your own.
Yeah. Today, when I'm like coaching or advising, I really unpack, why do you feel like you need a business partner? What are you looking for? I think you need to, again, you need to date.
Yeah.
You need to really know each other for a while and have explicit conversations, have a really good lawyer.
Yeah, I think it's harder to do it with a partner in most cases than mm-hmm. to do it on your own. So you have to make sure the trade-off, what you're getting out of that partnership, is worth the trade-off of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're aligning. It's much easier to just be like, this is how I define success and go forward.
So now you're running it all on your own?
Now I'm running it all on my own, yeah. And I love it because I have the flexibility where I do the coaching, I write, I am taking on more speaking engagements. I'm able to build a schedule that works for me.
Yeah.
And so right now that's what I need.
Yeah.
I need to, like, again, like I said, figure out what's right for me and then I'll go from there.
So are you glad you took the leap?
Oh, I'm absolutely. I mean, I would never go back.
Yeah.
I honestly, I'm like, this is who I am. I like being whatever you want to call it, a creative entrepreneur, creator, freelancer. There's so many terms out there for it. I just really enjoy it, and what a gift it is to be able to build a new way of working and making money. I think it's really powerful. The creator economy is very powerful.
Yeah, I can see it lights you up. It's great.
It does.
It's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.
I appreciate it.